Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A century ago, a copper baron in Montana bought himself a U.S. Senate seat with bribes out of Butte. In response, in 1912, Montana passed one of the nation's oldest campaign finance laws. They'll probably have to change that now, after the Supreme Court's 5-4 decision last week, unleashing big money as free speech in American politics. Across the country and in Washington, law will be changing, loosening. Critics call it a calamity. Supporters are celebrating. This hour on Point, American politics after the high court's bombshell. You can join the conversation. Are you bracing for an all-out blitz of campaign advertising? Where will this take our politics? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Lots of reaction to a very, very big decision by the High Court here on ABC's This Week. Republican Jim DeMint of South Carolina says he's on board with the High Court's ruling.
We can't promote freedom and democracy by repressing free speech. That's not the way to do it. I think people should be able to come together in associations and organizations and spend money to get their message out. I think that's going to promote the Democrat process instead of really what we've got now is we essentially give the labor unions carte blanche over our system, grassroots as well as spending. I think this will give businesses a chance to participate in the process.
This will give business a chance. On ABC's This Week, Senator Robert Menendez, Democrat, New Jersey, spoke out against the court's decision, warned about the political fallout.
The big losers are the average American citizen. This is going to put enormous amount of money and influence on behalf of big oil, health insurance companies, big banks that are going to obviously support candidates who support their point of views.
And Senator John McCain, who championed campaign finance reform, had this to say on CBS's Face the Nation.
We're going to see an inundation of special interest money into political campaigns. I think that diminishes the influence of average citizens.
We've invited in some very experienced observers who join us now from Washington. Gail Chadwick is congressional correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. She's been in the halls of Congress getting reaction to the ruling. Gail, great to have you with us.
Thank you.
Fred Wertheimer is one of the nation's leading proponents of campaign finance reform, president of Democracy 21, a nonprofit that works to rein in the influence of private money in American politics. Fred Wertheimer, welcome to On Point.
Thanks very much.
And with us from Washington is Kenneth Gross. He heads up the political law department at the law firm Skadden Arps. Clients include Fortune 500 companies and candidates at the state and federal levels. Ken Gross, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Gail, we just heard from some of the Sunday talk shows there, but give us a sense of what you're hearing in the halls of Congress. There has been a lot of uproar over this decision. Is it a game changer in terms of how fundraising and spending and politics are going to work in this country? What are congressmen and women saying?
Well, members of Congress think it most certainly is. Republicans think it could help them. Democrats think it could hurt them. I think that what's important to think about, too, is how deeply committed members of Congress are to reelecting themselves. A lot of campaign law has been, you know, focused on basically incumbency protection, and until this ruling, what concerned most individual members of Congress was that a millionaire with deep pockets could show up at the last moment funding these last-minute attack ads. Even people that were very secure in their seats, when you talk to them, are very concerned about that outcome. Add to it the possibility of corporate treasuries being able, at the last minute, to, you know, buy up all of the airtime in an area, deluging the airwaves with ads. You know, rational or not, that is what is in the mind of members of Congress right now, and I think you're going to see very quick moves. The Senate Rules Committee is beginning hearings the first week of February. That's going to explore options for curbing the impact of this rule, such as forcing more disclosure, forcing the CEO, for example, to go on the air and say, you know, I am the president of Enron and I endorse this message, and wait for the backlash from consumers and stockholders. Barney Frank is looking at the FEC. You know, can we, or rather, more securities regulation? Can we force stockholders to opt in or out of this kind of political activity? So I think you're going to see a lot of pushback on Capitol Hill.
And of course, legislators thinking about that deep pocket that could come in at the last minute. I mean, are people saying, I now have to be sure I know what every millionaire in my district wants, and you know, so that I don't get blowback at the last minute? Is it as real a threat and influence as that over their positions on legislation?
Well, if you talk to members, what is new here is the unknown. You know, will it make a big difference that you can write a fast check off a corporate treasury instead of having to go through a PAC? And is it? I'm hearing even speculation that, you know, given that there are limited number of television hours in a day, is it possible for deep pockets to claim a lot of them, and make it difficult for candidates and political parties to have a voice in this debate?
Well, look at what kind of legislation might emerge in response to the High Court's decision, but of course the decision itself puts strong parameters around what that might be. Fred Wertheimer, you've been one of the most outspoken critics in the country about this. You said last week it's wrong for the country, wrong for the Constitution, and wrong for our democracy. You've had a weekend to sit on it. What are you thinking? What do you see here, Fred?
Well, I'm thinking the same thing I said last week. I think this is a disaster for citizens in this country. For over a century, the ground rules in this country have been our campaigns are funded by citizens and associations of citizens. Citizens vote. They are the ones who make the ultimate decisions. And up until last week, they are the ones who have the right to finance political activity and campaigns. Now, this represents a sea change in policy. It's a fundamental reversal of decades of precedents. We do not see this as a case about free speech. Corporations can speak in many ways, and they have been able to, and they've been able to speak in campaigns, provided they use money given to their political committees voluntarily by citizens. This has opened up the vast aggregate wealth of corporations to enter into campaigns and to conduct direct campaigns for or against candidates. And its most devastating impact may well be on decision-making in Washington. If a member is sitting there and knows that depending on how they vote, a corporation, a group of corporations, a trade association representing corporations can take them out by spending $5 or $10 million, that is going to have enormous influence over how they vote on issues. Now, labor unions are able to do this as well as a result of the decision. Mm. They do not have the same kind of resources that corporations do. And you'll reach a point, in my view, fairly quickly where the corporations won't even have to spend the money. Just the threat of it is going to influence government decisions. So our sense is that this is very damaging and dangerous to our democracy, that we have to take whatever steps can be taken within the parameters of the court's decision. And the goal here must be to try to maximize the funding of our campaigns through disinterested private contributions, smaller contributions, and through matching funds, public matching funds, to make those smaller contributions more important.
When you say disinterested, I mean most people have an interest in the politics when they make a contribution.
Let me redefine that. Mm-hmm. Contributions that do not have the power to buy influence. And a $200 or $300 contribution is not going to buy influence with a member of Congress. A $10 million expenditure on an ad campaign is going to buy influence and does represent influence buying corruption, in our view.
Ken Gross, you know, Fred Wertheimer has worked on this for a long time. So have you. He calls this a radical decision that profoundly undermines our democracy. There has been praise for those who pushed for this for a long time, but a lot of apocalyptic concern expressed in the last nearly week now over this. Do you see the sky falling here, Ken?
The sky is not falling. You mentioned some people are celebrating. Some people think it's a calamity. I'm neither celebrating nor do I think it's a calamity. I probably would have supported the minority position if I were on the court and upheld the precedent. At the same time, the idea that this opinion is going to undermine democracy is just not realistic. And I think some of the goals that Fred has laid out would be great, no influence, and people were sort of just giving small amounts of money or everything was publicly funded is laudable, but it's certainly not realistic.
And why wouldn't it undermine democracy if there's so much money that can now come in even at the last minute into political campaigns? Why wouldn't that have that effect?
Because people and corporations and unions can participate in the political process. What this opinion does, and part of this I think has been overstated, it does not allow corporations or unions to make direct campaign contributions to federal candidates. While that is allowed in more than half the states and in some states like Virginia without limitation, what this allows is independent expenditures.
But they can carpet the airwaves with ads right up to the last second of the campaign.
That is going to be I don't think it's going to play out that way. Corporations, for-profit corporations, don't generally operate in that fashion. They have control government relations operations. They make political contributions through their political action committees. And they don't want to face shareholders at annual shareholder meetings saying, why did you spend $100,000, $500,000 on an ad that says vote for Joe Blow? Their customers can be alienated, their shareholders can be alienated. Mm. And the idea that a for-profit corporation, and particularly a publicly held one, is going to come out and do that is just not realistic. We could have seen that.
Ken Gross, hold the thought right there. We've got to take a short break right here. Fred Wertheimer, Gail Shattuck, Kenneth Gross in Washington. We're looking at American politics after the big high court decision. You can join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about American politics, American democracy, after the Supreme Court's big decision on campaign finance, with Gail Shattuck of the Christian Science Monitor in Washington, Fred Wertheimer, who is president of Democracy 21 there, and Kenneth Gross from Skadden-Arps big law firm representing Fortune 500 companies and others in campaign issues. You can join the conversation this hour. Are we headed back to the 19th century and no holds barred for big money in American politics? Is this a free speech victory? Is it a calamity? And will we have a bought and paid for Congress, a bought and paid for president? Can you imagine steps that might be taken to offset some of the impact of the court's decision? Or is it just a new day? President Obama's been very outspoken on it. He called it, right after the ruling, a major victory for big oil, Wall Street banks, health insurance companies, and other powerful interests to drown out the voices of everyday Americans. On Saturday, in his weekly radio address, he reaffirmed that opposition and said he's looking for responses.
When this ruling came down, I instructed my administration to get to work immediately with members of Congress willing to fight for the American people to develop a forceful, bipartisan response to this decision. We've begun that work, and it will be a priority for us until we repair the damage that has been done.
We're going to look at what that work might be in response to the High Court's big decision. Fred Wertheimer, you hear Ken Gross saying, look, the sky's not falling. It's just not going to change what people do that much. There are kind of built-in limits on the corporate side, let's say, on how much leeway the shareholders and those with business interests are going to give their executives to jump hip-deep into politics.
Well, that may happen for a number of corporations at the outset, but they have a simple way of both giving their money, engaging in campaigns, and not being disclosed. And that's by giving it to third parties, like the Chamber of Commerce or others, who can spend the money aggressively mm-hmm. without the corporation's name ever being made public under current circumstances. The decision says to corporate America, it's not illegal to spend this money. It is your constitutional right to do so. Corporations have a responsibility to their shareholders to maximize their profits. The stakes in Washington on economic interests for corporations, industries, are enormous. Mm. And given the opportunities, corporations will figure out ways, one way or the other, of making sure they can maximize their influence through the use of their resources. Now, one of the recourses here that we and others are looking at is to greatly increase disclosure in this area to make sure that the public and shareholders do know when corporations are engaging in these activities. That's not going to solve the problem, but it will at least put everything on the table for the public. But bottom line, you mentioned a century ago, before we started preventing corporate wealth in campaigns, senators used to be known not as the senator from Pennsylvania, but as the senator from U.S. Steel, or not as the senator from New Jersey, but as the senator from Standard Oil. Now, that reflected the fact that letting corporate money loose in the political arena is extraordinarily dangerous in buying influence and in ultimately corrupting government decisions. And that is the opening and opportunity that the majority of this Supreme Court have empowered. They have empowered influence buying corruption as a result of this decision.
Gail, I want to get your view on that, but Ken Gross, let me come back to you first. I'm looking here at a quote in the New York Times from Lawrence Noble. He's former general counsel at the Federal Election Commission and a colleague now of yours at Skadden Arps. And he says, a lobbyist can tell lawmakers, we've got $1 million we can spend spent advertising for you or against you, whichever you want. That sounds like the kind of threat that could buy a vote.
I think he's describing what the law would allow under circumstances. But what this
yes.
this opinion, I mean, we have been allowed to spend, corporations have been allowed to spend unlimited amounts of money in direct contributions to candidates in many states, and certainly corporate contributions are allowed in the majority of states right now. And there was something called 527s, which got a lot of attention, particularly in the 2004 presidential election. They could have been funded by for-profit corporations, the Swift Boat guys, the MoveOn.orgs, both sides of the aisle. And they were largely funded by millionaires on the Republican side and a lot of union money and some wealthy individuals on the Democratic side. This was not for-profit participation, even though the avenue was there and still there. I just don't see it materializing in the way that it is being characterized.
Gail, do you see some kind of natural limits on what may emerge here or, you know, a whole new world?
Well, I think the power of disclosure is something that has taken on a tremendous impact, both in terms of how business deals with Congress and how members of Congress see it. I think about the environmental debates the last year. The Chamber of Commerce took a very strong line, both in terms of cap and trade, in terms of health care. They were out in front giving interviews, lots of money all over the place. And suddenly they found that some of their corporate sponsors, Nike and Apple, were publicly disavowing them and backing off. And the reason is that they were hearing from their consumers. And I think that is what Congress, the members I've been talking to, are most interested in, to make it as painful as possible for a corporation to spend money in the way that the Supreme Court has just allowed them. So forcing them, for example, to go in front of stockholders, get permission, or forcing them to go, you know, even in the context of the ad, to identify their corporate identity. That is inviting boycotts for anyone who sells anything. And I think Congress's hope is that even if they can't hit the Supreme Court at the constitutional heart of this decision. And that concerns a lot of them. They really, you know, people feel that they have been limited by the way this case was argued in terms of what they can do. But they can take advantage of lines in that decision that open the door to disclosure, and they want to do that as hard and quickly as they can.
We'll look at how that might work. Yes, Fred.
If I could make a point here. We have a fairly recent example of what corporations will do when given the opportunity. We used to have something called the soft money system, which was a system of unlimited contributions from corporations, labor unions, and wealthy individuals to political parties. And by the year 2002, that had grown into a $500 million scandal and a corrupt system. Now, Congress shut that system down. President Bush signed the law.
With McCain-Feingold.
Yes, mm-hmm. and the Supreme Court upheld that law. But and a lot of that money came from corporations, the bulk of it. Many of these corporations were implicitly extorted to provide the money. But the corporations participated, and to a very large degree, because it became an avenue for influencing government decisions. Ironically, the five justices who overturned part of the McCain-Feingold law spent much of their time citing dissenting views and, in essence, saying, look, we're the five justices now. We can do what we want. That's the way I read this opinion.
So much
and
precedent.
I also read it to mean that when one of these justices from the conservative bloc leaves, the opportunity will then immediately arise for the eloquent dissent written by Justice Stevens to become a majority opinion again. Now, that's not an immediate solution, but down the road, I do not think this opinion will stand up to the test of time or history, and I think we will go back to an approach that we have taken for a century in terms of national policy and in terms of the court's position.
I want to look at what legislative responses there may be in the meantime, if it is just in the meantime. We have a lot of listeners who want in on this conversation. Ken Gross, Fred Wertheimer, Gail Chadwick, please stand by. Bob in Charlottesville, Virginia. Bob, you're on the air.
Well, I thought that things were bad enough before, and now we have this decision. And as a voter, I can't understand why my money being spent at corporations on, you know, their products and services would end up as political speech in some way that I don't want it to be. And I also think that only money from constituents should be going to the campaigns of the lawmakers. I mean, you can imagine, I just helped elect somebody here in Virginia, and all sorts of money came in from out of state to try and defeat him. And more is coming in now to try and remove him from office. I mean, it just doesn't seem like democracy to me.
So when you buy a product, you don't want to have the sense that you're necessarily paying for that corporation's political view.
That's correct.
But under this change, I guess you would be. Ken Gross?
If you live in Virginia, that's been the law of Virginia for many, many years. A corporation can give directly or indirectly. The idea of limiting contributions to constituents is not going to prevail because when someone's elected to office, they vote on all issues that are affecting all Americans. But I do want to say something about disclosure because I think it is in the hopper for one of the solutions to what is perceived to be a problem as a result of this opinion. And I'm certainly in favor of that. I think that many corporations have already signed on to transparency in their shareholder meetings. So even if they do give through a third party, they would declare that. And I think that's perfectly fine. I think corporations should be putting that information out there. I don't know of any that have been extorted from to give. And a lot of the soft money that was being given that was redressed to McCain-Feingold was union money as well. And the union supported this. They were on the same side of corporations. So I expect there to be a good amount of union money in the process as well.
We'll look at disclosure. Mike in Lotta, South Carolina. Mike, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I'm 63 years old, and my entire life, the Democratic Party has basically been the union spokesman. Every big union in this country, the same unions that have made China the number one producer of automobiles in this country, backed Obama and the Chicago mob crowd for presidency. Obama wants this union money. Now we're going to be put on a level playing field. Corporations are going to be able to contribute also to the Republican Party.
Mike, let us pick that up, and I thank you very much for your call. Fred Wertheimer, are we going to see, you know, is this a leveling of the playing field? You hear Mike's view.
Well, certainly unions are going to participate in this, and not all unions supported the decision in Citizens United. SEIU came out with some very strong statements. But it's not a level playing field because corporations have far more assets and far more resources that they can potentially put into the system than labor unions did. Interesting point made about China. This decision has opened a huge loophole in the restrictions we have on foreign companies, foreign countries, and foreign individuals participating in our elections. Under this decision, a domestic corporation controlled by a foreign entity is going to be able to make expenditures in our elections. So if you want to think about China and its sovereign wealth fund, their potential to own or control domestic corporations here may well allow them to legally participate in our elections.
Yeah, but that's ridiculous. This opinion goes out of its way to say that foreign money is illegal in this process. And the fact that a company happens to have a foreign parent, which many, many companies do, employed by Americans, they make millions of dollars in America, for America, by American employees, and those people have political action committees and participate in the process, and it is still illegal and very illegal for foreign influence to enter the process. And the court went out of its way to say
that. The court did not go out of its way to say that. The court said we leave those questions for another day. And the reality is that domestic companies controlled by foreign interests do not have any statutory prohibition on their participation in our election.
Let me get a call from Des Moines, Iowa. John, you're on the air, John.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a comment and a question. My comment is, how did corporations receive this personage in the first place? So I believe there was another Supreme Court decision on that. And also, my question is, how are these corporations going to get this message across to people? Are they going to use the media, meaning television and radio, newspapers, which are dying? You know, I use my mute button on the corporation commercials right now. I can use my mute button to block their advocacy for a candidate as well.
Yeah, if you know what it is. But, of course, that often doesn't come to the end when disclosure comes and what that might look like. But, Fred, how about it? I mean, maybe Americans' response to this is the mute button.
Well, it may be, but candidates, parties, and outside spenders have not been operating on the assumption that it doesn't make eminent sense for them to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on political advertising to influence voters. That is still where huge sums of money go in our campaign process. So I have a hard time concluding that individual voters in this country in large numbers will get away from this advertising ignoring it.
Gail, do you see congressmen revving up to run scared here because they can find opposition at the last minute, you know, coming from almost anywhere?
Oh, I think there certainly is. There's fear of anything unknown, especially that involves this amount of potential new money into politics. But Fred made a very interesting point back there where he talked about the next Supreme Court confirmation. And I think that is a very useful thing to think about, because what I've heard from especially members of the Judiciary Committee is just outrage that having gone through a confirmation where everyone vowed allegiance to stare decisis, that is, respect for precedent, they would not be activist judges, that a decision so soon out of the gate that looks to members as if it is most certainly overturning of precedent and also an activist judge, that it could change the tenor of those hearings. Now, it hasn't been forever that a judge or a nominee could come before the Senate Judiciary Committee and say, I will not speak about issues that may come before the court. and the Senate allow it. Mm-hmm. That House started with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I think the first thing you're going to see is an end to that. Senators demanding much more explicit answers on questions likely to come before the court because they do feel kind of snake-bit by this decision.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about American politics, American democracy, after the Supreme Court's big decision on campaign finance. Gail Chadwick is with us, congressional correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, Fred Wertheimer. He is president and CEO of Democracy 21, one of the country's leading proponents of campaign finance reform. Kenneth Gross is here. He's a nationally renowned authority on campaign law at Skadden Arps in Washington, former Associate General Counsel of the Federal Election Commission. Their clients there at Skadden Arps include a lot of Fortune 500 and political candidates at the state and federal level. We're at 800-423-TALK. And Fred, you know, the question that comes up we heard there before the break was, how did corporations gain this status as persons, just like every voter on the block? That goes way back, and they've got it again here.
Well, it's an interesting question. There was a decision back in the 70s in a case that certainly introduced the notion that corporations had free speech rights, the Beaumont case, the Bellotti case, but that case went out of its way to say they were talking about discussion of issues and not talking about participation in campaigns. I go back to what I said at the beginning in this sense. I mean, our elections have been about citizens. Citizens voting, citizens running for office, and citizens financing the elections. Corporations aren't persons. They have lots of rights. They're artificial creatures. As one of your callers pointed out earlier, the notion that the money that he provides to a corporation for buying a product all of a sudden becomes a form of free speech that deserves to be protected and goes back to that buyer who's as a, someone who's being represented by the corporation – is nonsense. And look, this I said this is a radical decision. Mm-hmm. For a century, our policy has been at the national level, corporations don't directly participate in campaigns. For decades, the Supreme Court has upheld that position and in various opinions gave support to it. Now, out of the blue comes a decision that says all of that is gone. You know, when the Chief Justice Roberts was in his confirmation process, and during that period, he made a huge point of saying that he was going to be in favor of judicial modesty. That would govern his activities. Now, if he thinks this constitutes judicial modesty, then I wonder what he thinks judicial activism is. It's something beyond anyone's imagination.
This is
an incredibly activist position that this so-called conservative court majority has taken.
Here's some responses from our website. This is from Frances. She says, this decision is just breaking my heart. In my native Florida, for one example, the development companies will now be able to buy sympathetic politicians at every level of local and state government and never have to worry about the environment again. The state will be decimated. Here's one from Anne. She says, if corporations are going to be given the same rights as people, then let's tax their income at the same rates as people. Michael in Niagara Falls. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
Okay. What do you see, Michael?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm an attorney, just so we know where
okay.
we're coming from.
Yep.
There is a solution to this, or at least a partial solution to this, that so far I haven't heard anybody address.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, I've drafted a statute that I'm sending out to all the members of Congress. And that basically is that I did read this opinion. The opinion obviously addresses donations or contributions made by corporations or, for that matter, other entities.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that it doesn't address and the government has every right to address, is how the corporation makes that decision. As of right now, as the chairman of the board or a minimal board of directors or a president that decides to make these huge donations.
Right.
If we bounce it back to the shareholders, especially at higher level donations, and make the shareholders vote on those donations, that accomplishes two things. One, it protects the equity of the corporation from basically being raided by a president or a chairman of the board that doesn't agree necessarily with all of the shareholders.
Yes.
And we have every right to pass laws that indicate how decisions of corporations are made. The other thing, of course, is that those shareholders, especially in big corporations, are diverse in their own right.
Michael, it's a very interesting suggestion. I think something like that is in place already in the United Kingdom. Ken Gross, could you see that working? All right, the corporations can contribute, but force them legislatively to get shareholder sign-off on significant political contributions.
That's not going to happen.
Why not? I mean,
corporations have been able to give to candidates for 100 years. The lady from Florida, for example, who's so concerned, any corporation in America could make an unlimited contribution to the Florida Republican or Democratic Party. That's been the law of Florida for many years. Shareholders have rights, absolutely. They own the corporation. And there was a case many years ago, a derivative suit, where if a shareholder doesn't like what a corporation is doing, they can bring a shareholder derivative suit. Or they can allege that the corporation is being wasteful under state law, under state statutes that prohibit corporations.
But why not require an advance sign-off by shareholders on political contributions? Why not?
But shareholders won't be able to – they can't supplant the decision-making of management. That's why you have management. That's why you have a corporation. How many plants to open? How many widgets to sell? How many commercials to take out? And what positions to take on certain matters, including political matters, that have to be in the interest of the corporation. But the concept of going to a shareholder for a proxy vote, other than the sale of the company or something like that, is just not going to happen. But the shareholders do have derivative rights, and corporations need to be concerned about that.
Well, I think that...
Fred, yes?
I think conceptually... The idea that shareholders ought to be able to approve, at least in general, the political activities of corporations, I don't think anything bars that, and I think some people are going to be looking at that. The problem I have with it is that the history of all corporate shareholder proxy fights is pretty bare in terms of winning these battles with management and corporation through the voting process. And, you know, that's why, as a practical matter, the people who own these corporations don't have the ability to exercise judgments about how they are going to use that money to engage in political activities. And that is one of the reasons these corporations should not be directly engaging in political activities.
Gail, do you hear people on the Hill talking about this, trying to take this kind of step legislatively to require a kind of proxy vote by shareholders in advance of contributions?
Oh, that's definitely on the table. I think the issue that is concerning members of Congress that we haven't talked about as much, And there's a confusion even the way we talk about it. Your listeners should know that we're not talking about contributions to candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And that is precisely the problem for some members of Congress. They would like the corporate money to be funneled through them. What this does is open up a whole new universe where corporations can bypass candidates altogether.
Mm-hmm. Just sweep in with their ads.
Bypass parties altogether, mm-hmm, and create a kind of alternative reality. And that's what I think is so unsettling to members of Congress. What does this do to parties? What does this do to party organizations? If a corporation has a choice of spending a dollar through a political action committee to help Congressman X, or spending, you know, $1 million to kind of reshape the context, the political context, mm-hmm, the political mm-hmm communication, how is that decision made? And the fact that parties are being cut out of this corporate money and that candidates are being cut out of this corporate money, even indirectly, is a new world. It's an uncertain world, and it's certainly not clear what even what we're talking about in terms of shareholder proxies could do about it.
Tom, if I may.
Yes.
The only thing I can think of that would be more dangerous than corporations making these huge expenditures is having corporations give these amounts of money directly to candidates and directly to parties. That was the old system that in terms of parties that was banned with very good cause in 2002. I mean, having a direct exchange of huge corporate contributions or huge contributions of any kind between a candidate or their proxy, the political party, opens the door for the most dangerous exchange of votes for money.
Maybe, but look, Gail's talking about even politicians who are not strangers to money and influence worried about an entirely sort of alternate reality being puffed up by corporate money that has nothing to do with anybody who got elected.
Well, I think the party committees may be a bit concerned that some of this independent money might start supplanting some of the role that the party committees will be playing. But again, I think the vehicle for this will have to be essentially through trade associations. I just don't see XYZ Corporation taking an ad out saying vote for Senator Schumer or don't vote for Senator Grassley or whatever.
Well, who knows? If I may, Gail, what about on the disclosure front? People are saying, well, that's the way to have some kind of break or accountability on this. But these are ads that can come in very late in the political process. And, you know, could disclosure just end up being a kind of, you know, fine print rolling before my eyes the day before the vote? Who knows what it was? It's gone, and I'm on my way to the polls.
Tom, the 2010 election is, if not toast, very close to it in those terms. We simply don't know what's going to happen in the 2010 vote. I think where your point kicks in is after that. If you find, for example, that corporations go after, you know, the top four environmentalists, senators, and try to knock them out, and there is a big backlash, either in terms of a consumer backlash or a stockholder backlash, that'll be something that they have to think about the next time they make those calculations. That'll also give Congress more grist for legislation and even more grist for court cases. But for 2010, this is the scary thing to members. We have no idea the impact this is going to have.
Jim, in Montgomery, Alabama. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Okay. What do you see?
Well, there's some things I'd like to make some statements about. First of all, when people are talking about corporations, they're acting as though there's some sort of entity with nobody at the reins. There's always somebody at the reins. So
Sure. Essentially
you're talking about an individual, a very small group of individuals at most.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a CEO, you're talking about an operator, you're talking about an owner of a company. So it is actually a person. Now, the problem that I have with this new legislation is that individual has much more power and ability than I do to express my views about a particular candidate. I mean, he's got deep pockets in the case of insurance industries, gas and oil industries, pharmaceutical industries. Those people have extremely deep pockets, and they're individuals.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing holds true. People are talking about responsibility to shareholders. Well, collectively speaking, although the vast majority of people are invested in companies, let's say retirement, I am. But my vote, it's probably outnumbered 1,000,000 to 1 by the CEO or more, depending on what company that I'm invested in. And the same thing holds true. In other words, he has much more ability to express himself as far as a stock vote is concerned or as far as being able to put his view on TV. That's extremely disturbing. This gives him much more power. It's not one person, one vote anymore. It gives him much more power to be able to express himself against me. And someone else, well, I want to correct something else that someone had made a statement about, which was that someone said, well, these people are going to be responsible to customers. Well, in a lot of cases, people are not going to stop buying gasoline because the gas companies is putting some particular viewpoint out there, because we all need
to have gasoline
in order to be able to go back and forth. Pharmaceuticals, people aren't going to stop buying their medicine because the way the pharmaceutical companies are putting out their messages. We're not going to stop buying from the utility companies. People need to have electricity. They need to have natural gas and so forth. what I'm saying here, the bottom line is, Tom, is that a lot of companies are like 600-pound gorillas that are in a movie theater. They pretty much do whatever they want to, and they don't have to be responsible to their customers, and they certainly don't have to be responsible to shareholders because, essentially, they are the shareholders.
Jim, we've got it, and I thank you for your call. Ken Gross, it is the law of the land, but why should it be that the corporations have the same right to get involved here? I mean, individuals, in the end, they're sort of voting on behalf of the country. Corporations, by definition, have corporate interests that they are required to put first, whether or not they're in the best interest of the country, the people.
Well, it's true that corporations now do have a right to amass wealth in their business. They're not in the business of politics. They're in the business of the product that they make. And they are responsible to their shareholders, and they can alienate their customers. I think Gail was talking about Nike and some of the companies that were got out front politically, and there was a backlash. So corporations cannot just function in a vacuum. They're in a highly competitive situation, and they need to be accountable to the people who own them. People will sell their interests in
them. But their interests are not necessarily the national interest, whereas individuals collectively, pretty much it is.
Well, my point is, I mean, I actually didn't support the outcome of this decision, but my point is that anybody who thinks the sky is falling as a result of it and that there's going to be unfettered, unlimited distortion of the process at the federal level, when this has been the law of a majority of the states for years, is distorting the effect of this opinion. It's a little bit of a hysterical reaction to something that is just not going to play out in the way that I see it. I'm in the trenches with corporations. We have tightly controlled government relations operations. They are developed relationships with members of Congress with limited political action committee contributions and not millions of dollars going out the door on campaign ads brought to you by XYZ Corporation.
Fred, how are we going to know and when?
Tom, I've been doing this for 40 years, and I'm not hysterical. I don't feel hysterical. And what I have seen over time is that the opportunities to influence the process by using political money are filled by people with interests in government decisions. And the idea that corporations are not going to figure out ways of engaging in this activity without alienating their shareholders is just not correct. They have the drug companies have huge economic stakes in health policy, as do the insurance companies.
Just to name one arena, and with that, we're out of time. Fred Wertheimer with Democracy 21, Ken Gross at Skadden Arps, and Gail Shattuck with the Christian Science Monitor. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.